Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Now, I am not reintroducing the idea of purgatory. But on the other hand, I do believe the baby was thrown out with the bathwater. With that came a belief, when you die, you're instantaneously and magically made perfect.
The soul of someone who dies immediately goes into eternity. There is no place where you make up for your sins. There is no purgatory. In the twinkling of an eye, we shall be changed.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Story time. More specifically, story time. His story. This is Wretched Radio, the conversation. It is not quieting down. In fact, the volume is being turned up. More and more people joining the chorus of those singing a Christian nationalist tune. Not talking about putting your hand on your heart, Christian nationalism, as the media would like to describe those of us who are at all patriotic. No, I'm talking about rightly understood Christian nationalism, or a theonomic understanding of government, or if you prefer, a dominionist form. Now, please note they're varying stripes. It is very difficult to have the conversation because there are so many opinions and shadings on this. Nevertheless, we must have a chat about it because there are those, especially of the younger generation, that are really digging Christian nationalism. Why? Why are young people looking for a more muscular expression of Christianity? And I think the answer to that can be found in the same place as we have the question about why are so many young men attracted to the manosphere? They want something heftier. They want something that's, you know, it's got some guts to it. And so I think that they're attracted to it. I think a younger generation, particularly male, they're tired of being beat down by progressive feminism and progressivism. Now they're tired of being told to be softer and squishier, and they want to man up. And so they find a voice that they love to listen to on the manosphere that presumably tells them how to be a man. Furthermore, I think they're attracted to Christian nationalism because it's a cause, a purpose, a flag of our own. It's marching orders, and it's something that feels like, yeah, let's take back that territory. And the numbers are growing. And that means we need to understand that movement, and we need to understand how to respond to it. And in order to do that, I think we need to understand history. An article written in 9 Marks titled "A New Christian Authoritarianism?" Writes this: a new generation of mostly young men, forgetful of history's harder lessons, wants to theorize once more. In other words, they want a philosophy of government. They want a governmental theory that they can then live out. So they're thinking philosophically, that's fine, that's good. They should be thinking predominantly biblically. They talk about theological retrieval. In other words, they open up old books of theology. And that's where a lot of people are going to come up with a support for their Christian nationalism, because it is my contention, and it is the contention of the author of this article in 9 Marks, the primary deficiency of Christian nationalism is its biblical underpinnings. I've shared this before. I have a pile of Christian nationalism articles, people trying to make the case for Christian nationalism. And in a stack of about 15, 20 articles, you won't find that many Bible verses. Some of the articles have no Bible verses at all. Instead, they do like to go to older theology books that were written in an era where there was a closer syncretism between church and state, and they will quote that, they will cite that. Now they'll go to, say, the Magdeburg Confession, because it appears to support a version of Christian nationalism, even though I do not think that the Magdeburg Confession supports it at all. In fact, I think just the opposite, personally. Nevertheless, they like quoting these theology books because the quotes that they find, they're punchy. They feel persuasive. And they like those things because it supports this new muscular version of a Christian expression in government. Back to the article. Yet they would do well to open up old books of history too. How did all that theorizing work out in the Reformation? You'll hear people quote the magisterial reformers because they will have a view that is far more sympathetic to Christian nationalism, and they love those citations. But that isn't the only part of history. How did that philosophy of government actually play itself out on the international stage? And the answer is, it was bloody. It was House of Tudor is what it was. It was scheming, and it was conniving, and it was power grabbing. And those Christians weren't less Christian, if you will, than we are in that culture. This almost feels to a degree like those who love to say that communism will work. And when you bring to their attention, historically, it's never worked. What do they say? Well, it'll be different here because nobody else has ever done it right. And the same thing, I think, can be said of those who would be promoting some form of Christian nationalism. Sure, maybe it was a little bit bloody here and there, but it wasn't done the way that we know that it should be done. I'm not so sure. Back to the article. Any comments on the wars of religion which decimated European population for centuries? Anybody commenting on that? That's promoting Christian nationalism? Anything to say about the ravages of anti-Semitism, which is also growing in popularity? What about conversations on the burning of fellow Christians at the stake or drowning them in rivers? That was done by Protestants, by the way. Yep, Roman Catholics predominantly toward Protestants, but Protestants also did that toward, well, the Anabaptists, for instance. How do we deal with those issues? How do we understand those historical events? One of the points that this article seeks to make in pointing out ultimately nine reasons Christian nationalism isn't biblical. Number one is it isn't biblical. Second of all, we are saying that it's going to work out better today than it has historically. How do we know that? Are we just a better stock than they were, say, 300 years ago? The article asks the question, what about the rank hypocrisy of power-hungry princes and city magistrates and slave owners who were only too happy to cloak their abuses and thievery under the sacramental cloak of baptism? If we're going to retrieve history, let's retrieve all of it, not just the clinically sterilized formulas of old theology books or state constitutions. I don't think that that's been stressed enough. I know that we've talked about that to a degree here on Wretched Radio, that we need to examine what was the outworking of this. Read of the religious wars. Protestant, Catholic, Ulrich Zwingli. People will quote Ulrich Zwingli and say, look at this magnificent quote. See, the reformers, they believed in Christian nationalism. Do you know how Ulrich Zwingli died? It was the Roman Catholic Church that quartered him. The canton in Zurich, he wanted it to be Protestant, of course. The Catholics wanted it to be Catholic. They literally went to a battlefield. Ulrich Zwingli was captured, and they tied his limbs to four horses and said, yeah. And he was ripped asunder. He was an advocate of Christian nationalism. How do we explain that that won't happen again? I don't think that we can explain that that won't happen again. That's one of the points that this article brings out. Maybe we think, well, we'll get it right. What about our progeny? Will they do better? The kids. Consider colonial America. There was indeed a religious fervor of those that came over on the first boat to establish a Christian colony. Second generation, that was almost gone. How do we know that that won't happen? If we are able to establish, if you will, a Christian nation, a theonomic nation, a dominionist-style government, Christian nationalism, whatever your flavor is, how do we know that the kids are going to hold the line? How do we know that the grandkids aren't going to have the same sort of power-grabbing attitudes that history has revealed to us is commonplace? Because people love power. And We've seen this historically in virtually every institution, every denomination, that when an organization is started, it started because there was a cause. There's something that was needed. Something is busted, and we've got to create a system or an institution that makes it right. And so they had those values firmly fixed. The next generation comes along, and they don't see the same urgency because it's not as hot as it once was. And so they begin to neglect those values that were the framework for the building of the institution. Third generation, they abandon them. So the first generation starts it firmly fixed. Second generation assumes those issues are settled and in place. And then the third generation abandons them. How do we know that won't happen with Christian nationalism? The answer is we don't. But alas, or a lad, if you identify as an XY, there are seven more reasons why Christian nationalism needs to be studied, examined, and dismantled. Next on Wretched Radio.
As a Christian, at some point, you're going to be in a conversation about abortion. Maybe it's at work, maybe it's at Thanksgiving dinner, or maybe even with your own kids. And when that moment comes, you're either going to be ready for the conversation or you're not. Life is Best gets you ready. It's hosted by Scott Klusendorf, one of, if not the sharpest pro-life apologists in the world. Life is Best, all 13 episodes streaming now on Fortis Plus for free. Download the app on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or just simply go to Fortis Plus. You've tried everything. You've sent articles. You've had the conversations. You've probably argued more than you wanted to. But you have a loved one who is still neck deep in the prosperity gospel, and nothing you seem to say gets through. Snatch Them from the Flames was made for exactly this reason. Todd Vriel and Justin Peters sit down and they tackle why your loved one is attracted to these movements in the first place. It's streaming for free right now on Fortis Plus. FortisPlus.org.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. We've brought together a team of fellows, people like Tim Challies, Dr. Jason Lyle, Dr. Andrew Walker, Dr. Greg Gifford, Pastor Brad Bigney, Todd Friel, Dr. John Krotz, Libby Clausen, Dr. Adam Tyson, and they're all committed to teaching the word without apology. And the reason that we've been able to bring voices like this together in one place is because of our gospel partners. Just go to FortisInstitute.org right now. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel. History is full of kings, and every single one of those kings, well, they're gone now. One king continues to reign, and Exalt the King with Todd Friel is a weekly podcast about that very king. Todd is the pastor of Alpharetta Bible Church, and every single week, he takes a passage of scripture and he preaches it until you can see Jesus in all of his beauty and glory. There's a new episode every week wherever you listen to podcasts or on FortisPlus.org. Let's be honest. Most Christian TV makes you want to change the channel. It's either so watered down it says nothing, or so weird you're embarrassed someone might walk in while you're watching it. Wretched TV is neither. Hosted by Todd Friel, you get teaching that makes sense. Cultural commentary that doesn't tiptoe around the hard stuff. Wretched TV, it's available right now on Fortis Plus for free. On your smartphone, on your tablet, on your smart TV, or just simply go to FortisPlus.org. Download the app and see what you've been missing.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is service, the spiritual ability to meet people's physical needs. Just as Christ came not to be served, but to serve, God provides the office of deacon, those who are charged and equipped to care for the physical needs of the church.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The voices are growing louder. And it's not just the ones in my head. This is Wretched Radio. The volume is being turned up on Christian nationalism. More voices joining the chorus that says, let's return to Europe. That's right. Christian nationalism, in my opinion, leapfrogs over American liberal history. And when I mean liberal, I'm not talking about AOC and Bernie Sanders. I'm talking about classic liberalism, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom to bear arms. That's classic American liberalism. And part and parcel to that liberalism was an understanding that the church is here, the government is there. Is there a relationship? Yes, there is, but it is not the same relationship that existed in magisterial Europe when the king was the head of the church, when there was a Holy Roman Emperor. It was very blended, and they knew, the founding fathers knew the history of Europe, and they saw that that sort of dynamic between church and state was very unhealthy, and they wanted to escape it. They jettisoned that. And so too, by the way, did American Protestant, Reformed Protestants. They rewrote, if you will, the Westminster Confession. And when I say, if you will, it's because they tweaked just little tiny things except for one section, and that was the section on church and state. They rejected the Westminster understanding. Why? Because the Westminster Confession was written where? In England? What was the relationship between church and state in England? It was much more blended. And the New Hampshire Confession of Faith said, we don't want that. We want more of an American liberalism. The realms, the jurisdictional realms of church and state and family being separated. And now the voices are crying, no, let's go back. Let's go back to the European model. And Nine Marks Ministries, they're seeing that threat. They have spilled much ink on this subject. The most recent article, at least that I found, I think it might be a little dated, is A New Christian Authoritarianism? And it cites nine reasons Christian nationalism is problematic. Number one, it's not biblical. Number two, why do we think that we and our progeny will do better managing a Christian nationalist state than our ancestors did in Europe? But that's not going to happen. The next generation, this generation, will become as tainted as they were in Europe. But there are other reasons, and some of these, they're a little complex, but nevertheless, they are definitely worth our understanding, because these are the issues that get very theological, and for those of us who love to see people get saved, the gospel propagated rightly, we don't want to see it undermined. And that's one of the critiques from this particular article. It undermines the gospel. How? Who is given the sword authority? Government. Who is given the authority, the authority, if you will, to compel people to come in? The church. Government isn't given that. The government isn't told, go to the highways and the byways and compel people to come in. That's up to the church to do that. The government bears the sword. If we blend the two, suddenly the church has the authority of the sword. And it will seek, ultimately, to compel people to come in via the sword. Or it will simply get them to try to act Christianly, behave like a Christian. Here's the Christian values. We're going to make you obey these values, both tablets of the Ten Commandments. And if you don't, we're going to exercise the sword. Consider Michael Servetus. Consider what happened post-Reformation. Consider the holy wars of Europe. That is why the mingling of church and state, ultimately, I think this is this particular article points it out, that when we put our first foot forward with the world, when we put our political foot forward, what are we speaking to them? We want to compel you. We want to coerce you. That's not the Christian foot. The Christian foot is a compelling, please come in. The king summons you to his table. Come to him. The sword was never given to compel people to come into the kingdom of God. It was given the sword to punish them for being evildoers. In other words, Christian nationalism, it undermines evangelism. From the article, non-Christians resent churches for many reasons, many of which are not the church's fault. But one cause of resentment, which can be our fault, occurs when the main foot we put forward into the world is the political foot. We do this when we love them less and our political safety more. Ouch. That hurts a little. Another reason Christian nationalism should be rejected. Post-liberal theories over-identify the state and the family and infantilize citizens of a nation. A little complex, but let me just give the Cliff's Notes version of that. When we give the blending of church and state, the authority of the sword, and you've got the authority of the church and the authority of the family. Now, when we blend all of these, we're then allowing the state to become the parent, infantilizing people. Now, that we soften the government's role. It's sort of think about Big Brother. George Orwell's Big Brother. Why was that authoritarian government called it? Kind of softened it. And it makes it feel like he's taking care of us. Big government is Big Brother. Somebody who's just looking out for us. That's a blurring. And that's a redefining of the roles of church, state, and family. In other words, it's kind of causing a mess. Furthermore, the government it isn't parental. It can't treat people tenderly. It can't be an incubator of faith. It can't lead people to believe in Jesus Christ. They're blurring the roles, and they're then asking the government to do a job that it was never assigned, nor can it ever accomplish. Another problem with Christian nationalism. Post-liberal theories give too little attention to the limits of government authority. Where does it stop? Will we have blasphemy laws again? Will people be put in jail for heresy? Will they be executed like Michael Servetus in Calvin's Zurich? No, he was Geneva. Ulrich Zwingli was in Zurich. Will we put the brakes on this? Once you assign the government with actively or passively enforcing all Ten Commandments, it's hard to find consistent principles of limitation. Another problem. They apply the inconsistent anthropology people with beliefs different than my own are most corruptible than I am. Okay, what was he saying there? I'm better than you. Our world, our system, our way of doing everything, we are better at running things than you are. From the article, why assume that so-called Christian governments would prove more just, especially as one generation gives way to the next? Do people forget how the second generation of American colonialists abandoned the first generation's Christianity, or the terrible anti-Semitism and racism which characterized the magisterial reformers in Europe? Why do we think that we're going to do a better job of running the place than they will, or that we have in the past? That's why we have a constitution to guide us. That is why we have how many different branches of government? Three. Why? To stave off the abuse of power. Another problem with Christian nationalism, they tend to work against basic political equality. We rule, but you don't. Another reason, such Christian governments or nations misrepresent Jesus. This could be the most important one of all. And by saying, hey, the governments, when it's government, church, and state, it's a Christian government because we're a Christian nation. Any law that is passed by the government, therefore, at least to a degree, the insinuation is that's a Christian law. And it's not. If we Christianize the government, the lesson is all actions formally represent Jesus in the same way a church formally represents Jesus. And that's not the case. Most of the government's laws, they're just a matter of just running the place. Matters of prudence, not biblical principle. And so when we've got a Christian government, if people hate the government, if they hate the tax system, we make it seem as if that's the Christian tax system when there's a blending of church and state. They don't like the speed limit. Well, that's a Christian speed limit. What is the attitude going to be when people don't like a law? Oh, they're going to be as angry at Christ and his Christ ones as they currently are at the government. And that could be the worst effect of Christian nationalism. One more, these theories distract the church from its mission. An awful lot of time and energy is being put into what I believe is a fanciful dream that we're going to revert the system in America, take away women's rights to votes, have a Christian prince, and be labeled as a Christian nation, forcing people to obey both tablets of the commandments. I believe it's an impossibility, frankly. And what is all this time and energy doing? It's distracting us from the church's mission of making disciples, and perhaps that is the biggest tragedy of all. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.